Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And welcome back to hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine. We're glad you're here. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon. We are live in the studio, our first show of the new year. Yes, and lots of folks wanting to get through. They have lots of questions for you, Doctor.
Okay,
you ready?
Let's get them.
Okay, let's head to Wallingford. Michael is on the line. Welcome, Michael.
Hello, Michael. How can I help?
Thanks for doing what you do. A couple months ago, I had the full panel done at your office, and thank you for that opportunity. I had a question about the TSH, the thyroid panel.
Yes.
On your reference range, I got a value of 4.7, and my doctor said that was high. But your reference range is 0.4 to 2.5. And is that the optimal for your clinic, or is that the industry reference range?
The industry reference runs from 0.4 to 5.4 is where the industry reference is. But what we find is the closer we can get a person down to one, the better they tend to do. And if you're over four, that tells me that your pituitary is recognizing that you need more thyroid hormone. And so it's sending a lot of TSH, which stands for thyroid stimulating hormone, to stimulate the thyroid and try to make it work harder. And so we would normally do would be to touch you with very small doses of extra thyroid and see if we can bring that level down less than two. And personally, I carry my own as close to one as I can get it.
Okay, thank you. So are all the references ranges your internal ones?
The green ones. If you look at the color coding, the red
I don't have the color code in front of me. That'll do it.
Yeah, the color coding, the yellow the red shows you where you shouldn't be at all. The yellow shows you the generally accepted normal range. And the green shows you what our target is.
Got it. That would have answered my question. I'm actually looking at a black and white printout. That's why. Okay. I have another completely separate question on the hormone creams. You've been saying to wash off at night. I thought I'd learned years ago that just had a 2 to 3 hour half-life, and after 4 or 5 hours, it was essentially gone. That's just not correct?
No. Well, the hormone itself has a shorter half-life. Estrogen is about 6 hours. Testosterone is only 75 minutes. But the cream continues to be absorbed through your skin as long as it's on. That's why we have you wash it off at night. Because as long as you're wearing the cream, you're still absorbing the hormone.
Okay, because I thought there were cautions in the massage industry and others that sometimes ask people, and that they were supposed to wait at least 2 to 3 hours if it wasn't washed off. But so apparently, it's just got to be washed off then.
And it also depends on which base you're using. See, when we have our creams custom compounded for our patients, we're using a base that continues to be absorbed. So when we have the pharmacy make it for you, we're having to make it with a cream that will continue to be absorbed throughout the day.
And okay, thank you. And guys, one more, I want to backtrack one thing on the TSH. If one takes thyroxine, does that actually permanently cause your pituitary to produce less, or can it go backwards if you got off the
If you stop the levothyroxine, then your pituitary will kick your TSH higher, and then hopefully your pituitary over a course of a couple of months will respond, and your thyroid will be kicking out more and more hormone.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. Really appreciate what you do. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
Yeah, thank you for the call, Michael. This is Leading Edge Medicine, taking your calls at 206-421-5757. We have Rich on the line now. Rich, you're calling from Toledo.
Hello, Rich.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm on my speakerphone. Do you hear me okay?
Yep, mm-hmm. We hear you fine, sir. Thank
you. That's great.
Thank you. Okay, I had a couple questions on separate supplements. One is actually Chinese medicine, but the first one has to do with what's called NMN. I think it's beta nicotinamide mononucleotide.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered if you, I haven't heard anybody really talk about it, and so I just wondered if you had done any research on it and
Had
any thoughts on it.
Yeah, I like it as a way to try to increase your NAD. Your nucleotide diphosphate. NAD is a compound in our mitochondria that is critical for the production of energy. And as people age, their NAD tends to drop. NAD itself is a very unstable molecule, so you can't give it to people by mouth. You can give it to them intravenously, but not as a pill or a supplement. But the NMN, on the other hand, is converted in your body to the NAD. And so you can raise NAD levels quite nicely with using NMN.
Well, did you see that the FDA, I was reading the FDA has asked people to take it off the market? And that makes me dubious because it probably has great benefit, and that's why they asked, or that's why they demanded to be taken off the market. I don't trust the FDA, but anyway,
after COVID, almost nobody does.
Yeah. Especially with that Robert Califf. I had one other question, and concerning it's a Chinese medication that I've taken actually off and on over the years. The Chinese medication, or the Chinese pronunciation, because I learned it from a Chinese dentist that I work with, it's called Shen Le Shen Wan. You see it as Kai Kit Wan. And whenever I've had prostate issues or urinary tract issues, just within a few short days, it pretty much takes care of it, which is pretty amazing since I've used a lot of different formulations, including ones with beta cytosterol. But this Shen Le Shen Wan really, and it does come in different formulations, but I've just found it to be very beneficial, and I just wondered if you'd ever heard of it.
No, I have not. That's one I have to plead ignorance on.
Okay, all right. Well, I got it initially from a naturopathic physician years ago, and since your wife is Chinese, I thought, well, maybe you delved into the Chinese medicine area.
Well, and there are a few of the Chinese botanicals that I have looked at pretty closely, but that is not one I recognize. So,
okay, all right, okay. But so, is going back to the NMN, is that something that you would sell, or is it something that you're just looking into?
Well, it's something that I use, but I don't sell. We don't have it in our our online store.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your input on that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call, Rich. And you can call, too. The phone lines are open for you today. We are live in the studio with Dr. Jerry Mixon.
We got 50 more minutes.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Come on.
206-421-5757. We're headed to Edmonds now, and we have Bonnie on the line. Good morning, Bonnie.
Hello, Bonnie.
Good morning. Happy New Year to everyone.
Well, thank
Happy
you,
New
ma'am.
Year.
Happy New Year to you,
yeah.
too.
Thank you. Okay, so here we go. I have a friend that is on Amazon a lot, and she orders things, and she doesn't ask, but she sends me stuff. And she sent me estrogen cream and progesterone cream, which I, you know, and I'm on bioidentical hormone replacement. And my concern is that possibly I would be overdosing if I was to put this on my face.
Well, I'd be cautious. Yeah, I'd be very cautious. For one thing, which estrogens? You know, estrogen is not a hormone. It's a class of hormones. There are dozens and dozens of estrogens that have different potencies. Human estrogen, the primary one is called estradiol.
Right.
70% of the estradiol is converted to one of half a dozen estrones in your liver. And then with pregnancy, you kick out estriol. And those are the primary human ones. Most of the stuff that you buy on Amazon and stuff, and if you can get it without a prescription, it is usually a phytoestrogen, a plant estrogen of some sort.
Right.
Which would be great if you were a, you know, a rutabaga or a soybean. But since I presume, since you're speaking to me, you're human.
Yeah, Bonnie's not a plant, Dr. Mixon.
That's right.
She's real.
And you know, you probably don't need a plant estrogen. You probably need human-type estrogens.
Okay. So, and is that what we take in our hormone replacement?
Yes.
Human?
When we write anything written by my doctors, we're writing the exact hormones that your own body would produce when you were younger.
Okay. Okay. Now, the progesterone says 20 milligrams of progesterone per pump. It's from the company Now, N-O-W.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a pretty puny dose of progesterone.
Okay.
Most of the, progesterone is one of these things that is not well absorbed through the skin. And so if I'm going to drive it through the skin in any appreciable quantity, I'm going to probably use more like 200 milligrams per cc, about 10 times the dose that you're getting with that.
So what she's thrilled with is the base, the cream that makes her skin moist.
Yes. And, you know, so she's got a great moisturizer. That's fine.
Right. Okay. I have one other question this morning.
Okay,
Hold it, though.
We have to go to break real quick, Bonnie. So why don't you stay on the line, and we'll get that other question as soon as we get back, all right?
Absolutely.
Okay. You bet. Taking a break real quick. It's Leading Edge Medicine and taking your phone calls too. 206-421-5757 is the number to get through to Dr. Mixon, who is live in the studio. That number again is 206-421-5757. We'll be right back, and we'll talk with Bonnie, Mark, and Rob in just a moment.
It's another tequila sunrise, staring slowly across the sky. Said goodbye.
And welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Happy New Year. Dr. Jerry Mixon live in the studio today. I'm Lynette, and we have Bonnie from Edmonds on the line. And Bonnie, you had one more question for Dr. Mixon. Thank you for waiting.
Well, yeah, possibly two. I'm sorry.
Okay. Oh, that's fine.
Go ahead.
Okay. The Grail test, when it was out, you know, and I went to the doctor because I had a scab on my scalp in the last month and a half, and they tested it, biopsied it, and it's cancer.
Yep.
So would the Grail test not show that?
Yeah, skin cancers don't usually have enough of proteins getting dumped into the bloodstream to get picked up. So those are almost always due just to plain old-fashioned sun exposure.
Right. Yeah, okay. Okay, well, the other last question then is when I eat sugar, you know, something that has sugar in it or sometimes even fruit, I get extremely loose bowel. Sometimes it happens immediately, sometimes the next morning. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I need to stay away from all the sugars, but would that be leaky gut?
No, but some people are very sensitive to fructose, and that is the fruit sugar. So fructose.
But would I eat chocolate?
Well, chocolate
happens
does
as well.
Yeah, but chocolate would have sugars added to it. Depends on which chocolate they add, or which sugar they add to the chocolate. You know, fructose is a high fructose corn syrup. Is what most candy manufacturers are using to sweeten their product, and so almost any candy is going to have a fair bit of fructose in it.
Okay. All righty then. Then I need to stay away from that.
Okay. Well, it's healthier
thank
to stay lean and happy anyway.
There you go.
Yes.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you for your calls, Bonnie. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. 206-421-5757 is the number to get through to Dr. Mixon today. We're headed right, not too far, to Seattle. We have Mark on the line. Happy New Year, Mark.
Happy New Year. And yes, I'm a patient there at the clinic, and I have a question about PVCs, and I have had an acquaintance who had to have an ablation because of it. I have another acquaintance who is going to have a Watchman implanted. I am not aware until about a year ago that they diagnosed that I was out of sinus rhythm at times. I don't feel it at all, and I'm in my early 90s, and I'm very active. Is there anything I can do to either get, you know, stay in sinus rhythm and not have the PVCs, the lifestyle change, or medicine?
All right. Well, let's address PVCs. First of all, PVC stands for premature ventricular contraction.
Okay. Yes.
And so what is happening is that some little focus in your heart is triggering a contraction faster and sooner than it's supposed to. Mm. These can be monofocal. In other words, you can only have one spot that's having a PVC, or multifocal, where you've got multiple places in the heart doing this. Multifocals are more concerning than a monofocal, simply because it tells us that more of the heart is irritable, more of the heart is firing when it shouldn't. And our worry is that you go from PVCs to premature ventricular tachycardia. And ventricular tachycardia can be a fatal condition. You can just, you know, basically drop your blood pressure out and die in a matter of minutes. Mm. So we don't want PVCs to convert all the way to a tachycardia. Most people over about 60 or 70 have some PVCs. So the question is, how many are you having? How often are they occurring? And is there just one locus in your heart that's doing it, or is it multiple areas? And that's all answered with a simple EKG most of the time. So just getting a good EKG, and since you know you have PVCs, I presume that you had an EKG of some sort.
Just lying down, about 30 years ago, I actually had one EKG on while I was on a treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
Is one better than the other?
Yeah, the treadmill EKG gives us more information. PVCs can occur just because the heart slows down a little too much. And if the sinus node is not firing often enough, then some other part of the heart will trigger and we get a PVC. So people that have slow heart rates can sometimes just get PVCs because their rate is too slow. The nice thing about the treadmill is you're exercising. So we start with an EKG when you're at rest before you get on the treadmill. And then sure. As you start exercising and you put more and more strain on the heart, because they start the treadmill very slow, gentle walking, and then it goes faster and faster and faster. As we start making your heart beat faster and do more work, we're able to see what its reaction is. If the PVCs simply go away as the heart is increasing its workload, that's a good sign. Those are just generally very benign. They don't cause any major problems. If, on the other hand, when your heart comes under load and is having to work harder, you start to get more PVCs, now that's more worrisome. Okay, then we may need to put you on some medication or do some more studies to see why is your heart not keeping up with its workload.
Okay. About 30 years ago, the comment of the doctor after the treadmill test was, I had, a little bit of irregularity before the test, but once I got on the treadmill and speeded up, he said it all smoothed out and was okay at that time.
And that's usually reassuring. As I said, if your heart is keeping up with the load and you're not getting more PVCs, if they could go away, we say, okay, this is just a PVC's been triggered because the heart is not pumping quite as fast as it would like to.
Yes, I see. Okay, and I used to be a runner, a track team, and unfortunately, I've had a hip replacement with metal parts, and I've been told no more running. So I'm not getting quite as much exercise. Is there anything else?
Walk as fast as you comfortably can. Yeah. Use the elliptical that doesn't pound on your joints, or do rapid walking. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but there's no particular diet that will affect
the PVCs? No.
Way.
Not really.
No. Okay. All right. So I'll just keep up the exercise. Yep.
Keep up the exercise. If your cardiologist is at all worried, he'll set you up for a treadmill.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you for the information, Doctor.
You're welcome, sir.
Happy New Year.
And congratulations.
Year.
If you're still thoroughly active in your early 90s, you're doing a lot of stuff right. I'm delighted for you.
Yes.
Yes. I feel good otherwise.
That's wonderful. No keep it up. Keep it up.
Keep doing it, Mark.
Okay. Bye-bye, sir.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Doctor. Bye-bye.
There you go. I like that. He's almost, about 27 or about 17 years older than you?
Yes.
Yes. Look at that. He could be our poster child. He is a patient at Longevity, and you can be too. And hopefully, if you are, we will hear you and be talking with you as you continue on into your 70s and your 80s, and just like Mark, into your 90s. We're offering the free health analysis appointment at our Longevity Medical Clinics, all three of them. We have Linwood, Tacoma, or our brand new facility that's just beautiful. We're still beautifying it in Kirkland. And all you have to do is make an appointment and come on in, meet the staff, see what we can do for you. Take that free health analysis appointment, just a blood test and a quick in-body. That will let the doctors know what you could be at risk for.
Yes. And then if you're at not high risk, we'll reassure you and send you on your way.
And say, if we
see significant risk, then we're going to encourage you to go ahead and do a larger panel that will give us a lot more information than just those two. And if you opt for the bigger panel, that comes complete with an hour visit with the doctor. And so you'll sit down with the doctor and go over all that lab work. And we can tell you exactly where you are, what your risks are, what it's going to take to get you where you really ought to be. And then you get to decide if you want to be a patient or not.
Mm-hmm.
If you like what time and gravity are doing to you, you don't need to be a patient. If you want to be stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and happier than you currently are, then you should sign up and become a patient.
Absolutely. And it all starts with that phone call or logging onto the computer. Either way, we have those three clinics. There is one near you. Here's the number to call, and you can do that right now at 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website for details at lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. And while you're on our website, too, you can see all sorts of information. What we do, you may have questions, you will get answered there, but we would love to see you happy and healthy in this new year. Again, the phone number, 866-86-YOUNG, or go to lmclinic.com. We're going to take a quick break here. We will be right back. Rob, we lost you. If you want to call back, we'll get your phone call in as quick as possible. Otherwise, if you have a question for Dr. Mixon, here's the number to call. Right now, we are live in the studio, 206-421-5757. We'll be right back.
The sound of your own wheels drive you crazy. Lighten up while you still can.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Happy New Year, the first show live in the studio of the new year.
Yep.
Yes.
Now we just need to talk to some people.
That's right.
And we've only got 25 minutes to go.
That's right. So if you have a question and you've been waiting, Rob, if you want to call back, we'll get to you as well. Here is that number, 206-421-5757. We're going to stay in Seattle. We have Kay calling in with her question. Hi, Kay. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call again. I was wondering if someone that can't stand can still do your two tests that you give.
Oh, if you can't stand.
You can't stand. No, the in-body we can't do.
Okay.
You can't do.
No, that one requires you to stand on the platform, unfortunately. But we can certainly, we can certainly do some other testing for you. So that's
okay. And my other question is there a general guideline of calories that a person needs to eat in order to lose weight?
Yes. I mean, the general guideline is less than you burn each day.
For those of us who just really aren't hungry, and so I know I don't eat enough, and I can't lose any weight. So I was wondering if there's like a general, is it based on how much you weigh now that you have
it's
to
based
have
on,
calories?
Yeah, it's based on a couple of things, what your current weight is and how physically active you are.
Okay.
The more physically active you are during a day, the more calories you burn.
Right.
But what we call your basal metabolic rate is the number of calories that you burn when you're sitting still or laying in bed. And that tells us how many calories you burn without any physical activity. So, and then on top of that, we look at your size, we look at your physical activity and calculate about how many calories you're going to be burning with any given amount of activity. And that gets added to the basal number. And that gives us a number that is how many calories you have to maintain your current body weight. And anytime you cut below that, then you start burning fat.
Okay, but isn't there some kind of a guideline that you could figure out, for normal people? I mean,
there are averages.
You have to consume so that you're not in the starvation mode.
Yeah, there are averages that that are there. There's nomograms that say if you are of this age, of this gender, of this height and current weight, here is the average amount of calories that you would generally require on a day-to-day basis. Yes, there are those. They're easy to find. All you do is look up, go on go online to Google and type in calculating basal metabolic rate. And they'll show you the formulas. Yeah. And it'll show you the formulas for calculating it. And most of them will also have a nomogram. And the nomograms are gender and age specific.
Okay.
So it's different for men than women. And then the older you are, the fewer calories you need to burn to maintain your body mass.
Okay. If I'm a female, 78, and weigh 138.
Boy, your calories are going to be very low, especially if you can't stand, which tells me you're sitting or lying all day. So
well,
that's,
but I'm very active. But you're right.
Yeah.
So can you give me kind of a ballpark?
Well, hang on a second. Let me.
Oh, he's actually looking it up.
Yeah, let me pull up a nomogram, and we'll see what your average caloric intake of someone in your situation would be. Okay.
Great.
So let me see here. I got to go to nomogram, basal caloric needs. All right. All right, so let's see, boys, girls, how old are you?
78 and 5 foot tall.
Okay. Trying to find one that would fit you saying that you are wheelchair bound, and those are a little harder to find. But it looks.
But I am active. I move around all day long. And well into the night.
All right. Well, that's all good news.
Yeah.
Okay. It looks like we are probably in the neighborhood. Hang on one second. Goal weight 140 BMR. Yeah, it looks like you're according to this nomogram, it looks like you're probably in the neighborhood of about 1,400 to 1,500 calories a day.
Really, that many?
That's what it's saying. Okay. But.
And so if I were a little bit below that, I should be able to lose weight.
Yeah, men tend to lose more than women, obviously. But
of course.
You know, at 60 plus, it says 1,200 to 1,600, which is why I took the mid-range of 1,400.
So gotcha.
Female over 60, 1,200 to 1,600 is the average.
So if I'm typically way below that, if I get up to that, then would my chances of losing a few pounds be better?
No, then you'd probably gain weight. Yeah.
Okay. No.
The question then becomes why, if your caloric intake is, let's say, 1,000, and you're not losing weight, what's lowering your BMR below what we would normally expect it to be? So then we'd be starting to look at, you know, things like your thyroid function. If your thyroid is low, your metabolism would be lower, and that would mean you would burn fewer calories. So what we'd be looking at then is trying to find a reason why someone that would normally have a BMR of 1,400, 12 to 1,400, say, is not losing weight at 1,000. And we then have to find the reason that your metabolism is so slow.
Yeah, I'm assuming that I've been starving myself for years because I'm just never hungry.
Okay.
Well, so that's why I was wondering how to.
Yeah, and that would involve doing some laboratory tests, you know, a really thorough history, monitoring your activity for a couple of days, looking closely at what kinds of food you're eating. You know, for instance, higher protein, less carb is not as efficient, so that might help you to lose more weight. So
that's something that you guys could do?
Yep. Yeah, it can be calculated, and we could be looking for a reason. But once more, you know, we don't normally see people for episodic care. We you know, we bring them on board for a full program for the year.
Right, right. What does episodic mean?
Well, episodic means you just see somebody once in a while.
Oh,
you know, somebody comes in, you see them once, you don't see them again for 2 or 3 years. That would be episodic.
Oh. Right, but if you were a client.
Yes, if you were in our,
be something.
If you're in our program, you'd be getting seen at least every 3 months. Yes.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Oh, thank you so much for your call.
Bye-bye.
All right, quick break, and then back with Rob on the line and Lois, too. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back.
And I said, hey, pretty lady, won't you give me a sign? I'd give anything to make you my own mind. I'll be your bidding and be at your beck and call. Yeah, I've never seen anyone looking so fine. Man, I gotta have her, she's a one of a kind. I'm going once, going twice. I'm sold on the lady in the second row. She's a
We're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Just a few minutes left of the show today. We're going to dive in. We have another caller here. Let's see. We've got Rob. We lost him. We got him back. Hi, Rob. We're glad you're
Hello,
here.
Rob.
Welcome.
Welcome home.
Good afternoon. I have a question for you on thyroid. I had a TSH T4 test done, and my free T4 was done, and it was a quote-unquote low normal, but it was well above the bottom, just below the average.
Okay.
And but my TSH was running a little bit on the high side, like 4.8.
Okay.
And I asked the doc about it, and he says, oh, don't worry about it. You were sick 3 weeks ago. That can possibly drive it. About 6 months later, my primary care provider was gone, and I got a new one. He did another TSH only, and I came out to 5.2. He says, oh, it's gone up. You need to be on levofloxacin immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wait a minute. My pre-T4 is still normal. And he says, it doesn't matter. You need to be on levofloxacin. And I said, well, both Mayo and Cleveland clinics say subclinical really responds to it. So I did not go on it. I subsequently got a free T3 done, and my free T3 is now at the very, very, very high end of that range. So I'm like, well, wait a minute. T3 is made from T4. If I increase my T4 anymore with TSH, I'm going to really shoot myself in the foot. My question is, with those lab readings, and we are going to repeat them, but with those lab readings, well, we're waiting 6 months to repeat them. With those lab readings, with arguably not quite high, but almost high free T3, a still slightly below, well, maybe more than a little slightly below, but still above the bottom of the range on free T4, but a TSH high, what's your thoughts?
Well, TSH, as it goes up, it tells me that your pituitary gland thinks you need more thyroid.
Yep.
And so the TSH, which stands for thyroid stimulating hormone, is being ratcheted up to stimulate the thyroid to make more hormones. All right.
Yep.
So that's what that rising TSH means. And so when we check thyroid.
Oh great. I'm sorry, you dropped off for a second. What'd you say
about? We still got you.
When we check thyroid, we never just check an isolated test. We check TSH, total T4, free T4, total T3, and free T3. All right. We look at all of them at the same time.
I ended up getting those all along with two antibody, which I can't remember the name of them.
Okay.
And those were all normal. The only thing that's off is my TSH.
Okay. Well, you know, TSH says that you're having to flog your thyroid pretty hard. In other words, you're making a lot of TSH to stimulate that thyroid to produce as much hormone as it can.
Okay.
And so, you know, it tells me the thyroid is failing, it's going downhill, and you're compensating by making more and more TSH, trying to drive it to work harder and do a better job. That's really what's going on here.
Well, my theory was, that makes sense because my thyroid's in the process of failing, but why is my free T3 so high?
Well,
if I create more T4, won't that cause my free T3 to go even higher because it converts T4 to T3?
It may, but here's the issue. Okay, when your metabolism is slowing down, T3 is about 3 to 3.5 times as potent as T4. Okay. So T4 is the primary hormone made by the thyroid. You then convert it to T3 to meet your metabolic needs. If your body is recognizing that A, your thyroid is failing, B, your metabolism is slowing a bit and it needs to perk it up, then you've made a more efficient conversion of T4 to T3. Because the T3 is the one that actually provides most of your metabolic effect.
I understand that, but if I increase my T4...
You may, but what will probably happen is if you get the TSH will drop, okay, then your T4 will go up somewhat. If your metabolism is now picking up, you may then decrease your conversion of T3 to T4. I'm sorry, of T4 to T3. So it's a dynamic system, and it's responding to inputs and needs on a continuous basis. The good news is that nothing you do here is going to be irrevocable. If you start with a very light dose of levothyroxine for, say, 3 months, and then recheck it, and by very light, I'm saying 50 micrograms a day of levothyroxine. And then if in 3 months we see your TSH is dropping, your T4 is coming up, and your T3 is coming back down towards the center, that'll tell me the whole system is just coming back into balance. Right now you're out of balance because your thyroid is trying to quit. And your whole system is trying to alter your metabolism to compensate for your slowly failing thyroid.
Okay. So then it's not going to cause more problems if I take the levothyroxine.
It's very unlikely, but always the rule with thyroid is because the half-life of thyroid is almost a week. Okay. It's not hours like other hormones. It's almost a week for the half-life. So we make our changes in very small increments, and we make them infrequently, very slowly. So every 6 or 8 weeks, we make an incremental change. And we make those changes in little tiny, tiny doses, not big changes, not big swings. And so the average dose of levothyroxine that most people with thyroid disorders are on is about 120 micrograms a day. Okay. And so I usually would start somebody on like 50. And I'd give them a couple of months and check everything again. And then if I need another change, I'll go to 75.
Very slow.
You know.
Yeah.
And we kind of bring it into balance gently, slowly. We try not to make waves with thyroid.
Yes.
Okay. So despite what the Cleveland Clinic and the Mayo Clinic says about a TSH below 10, you would still say, even though I'm still well below 10, it's worth trying it.
Personally, I carry my own TSH about 1. That give you an idea of what mine got up at its highest when I was about late 60s or close to 70. It got up to about 3, and I did not accept that. And I'm using about 75 micrograms a day now, and I'm carrying a TSH right about 1, sometimes 1.4. And my T3, free T3 and free T4 they're not in the middle. They're up about the top 75%. But I like having a high metabolism. I like having lots of mental and physical energy. So I want my T3 and T4 both about the 75th percentile of that range.
So when your TSH was high before you brought it, well, pseudo-high before you brought it down, your free
right.
T4 was normal at that time? Or was
my
it T4 low?
Was perfectly normal. It was in the mid-range. My T3 was also mid-range. But I was just feeling a bit sluggish. I just didn't have my customary energy level. It had waned slowly over the last few years. And by moving it into this range, I'm finding that I am full of energy day and night. And I can run, jump, leap, cavort, dance into the night. And I do especially like the cavorting part. All right?
I understand. Okay. So then you believe that even though everything else is quote unquote normal, changing the TSH or attacking the TSH is worthwhile.
Yes. I don't believe that. I don't want to be normal.
No, that's right.
I want to be the best I can be, the strongest, fastest, leanest, smartest, sexiest, and happiest I can possibly be. Normal is grossly overrated.
But one of the studies I was reading talked about the pituitary going haywire and doing it when it wasn't really necessary, and therefore I wondered if I had a pituitary problem more than
it. And it can happen. Yes, and that can happen. And that's why, you know, you make your changes gently, slowly, and you see what's happening. And, you know, if we think you got a pituitary adenoma, we'll send you in and get an MRI of your pituitary. Just takes a couple of cuts through the pituitary, and that'll tell us if there's a tumor there it shouldn't be.
Yeah. Is that helpful for you, Rob? We got to go. We only have 30 seconds.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right, you bet.
Thank you.
Oh, wow. What a show. So glad you joined us. Join us again next week. Dr. Umat will join us, and hopefully she'll be very excited to have
she'll tell us all about the Husky game.
Yes, she'll be there on Monday, so wave at her if you see her. We will be back live in the studio with Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat next week. You have a great rest of your weekend. Happy New Year, and thank you for listening to Leading Edge Medicine right here.